Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Today, we have a full house, if you can't tell. We're going to have with us Dave Albert from RCS. We're going to have James Cordy, who you might know from Blue Star. He's been on some podcasts already before, as well as Dwayne Roebuck, also at Blue Star. Our topic is going to be one that maybe would have been taboo once upon a time, but now is becoming very, very important in the industry, and that's cannabis. We're going to discuss what's happening in the cannabis industry, how has COVID impacted this particular industry, what kind of technology is taking off, where are the challenges, and how do we market to them? We got a lot to talk about, so we're ready to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right. As I mentioned, we have a packed house, plenty of guests that are going to have a lot to talk about today. With us today, first of all, we've got Dave Albert. Dave is the president of Retail Control Solutions. Dave, welcome to the show. Tell us a little about yourself. How did you get where you are today?
Well, it's a complicated story, but I was a retailer and wholesaler in the sporting goods industry, and I got approached many years ago in 1987 to actually provide a point of sale solution for sporting goods. That's how I stumbled into it. So it's hard to believe. I know I look very young and stuff. That's I've been around in point of sale since '87. But it's but we started off and we've done various vertical markets over the years. We've done sporting goods, of course. We've done a lot with museums, nonprofits like thrift stores. We do a lot of sporting venues, and then of course we've gotten into cannabis. But we have an office in New Hampshire, which is Enfield, right next to Dartmouth College. And we also have an office in Fort Collins, Colorado, which is the mecca for the start of the cannabis world. So,
that's right.
Can we say that you're long in the tooth in this industry then, Dave? You've been around for a little while here?
I've been around for a while. Hard to believe, but I've been doing cannabis since... it's been 8 years now we got into cannabis.
Yeah.
So we're one of the pioneers in selling point of sale to cannabis retailers. So
awesome.
Nice. Yeah. Well, Dave, again, thank you for being with us. Our next guest is Dwayne Roebuck. Dwayne is the channel manager here at Blue Star for retail and IoT on the Zebra team. And Dwayne is also basically become our in-house expert on the cannabis industry. He has long fought for recognition in this particular industry, you know, involvement, making sure that we have the right connections with the right VARs, that we're really connected here. He's a guy who just, he knows his stuff. So Dwayne, tell us a little bit about maybe how you kind of got there and, you know, what your overall role is within that industry.
Okay, so probably close to 4 years now, I started looking, you know, looking out and doing research at, you know, what were good opportunities for us to look at as far as emerging technologies. And, you know, everything I came across pointed me towards cannabis. And I envisioned what it would be like had I been in the early 1900s during the Prohibition, and we were able to get in on the ground floor there. So I pretty much pitched the concept to our executives, you know, naturally at that time, met with a little resistance, but you know, we agreed that not only was this emerging industry that we should get into, but one that we could place ourselves as thought leaders, especially given the seed to sale tracking compliance and things like that.
Glad to have you involved in that, and glad to have you on the podcast.
Hey, glad to be here.
Our last guest is James Cordy. Doesn't really need a particular introduction. If you've been listening to this podcast at all in the last couple months or so, he was our guest on our very first podcast, Digital Marketing in a Crisis. He's done an email marketing podcast for us. James is our digital marketing manager at Blue Star. He's going to talk to us a little bit later about marketing into that world and where there is a lot of interesting opportunity, and also some things not to do, because we've been around the horn a little bit on marketing in that area. And there's some things you should do and some things you definitely should not do. So, James, thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me again, guys.
So I want to get into our main topic because I think we're going to have a lot to talk about. The three of you, we're going to pretty much sit back and let you carry the load here because I think you guys are going to have a lot of great insight and interesting things to talk about. But I want to start off with a couple little statistics first. So as we stand right now in mid-2020, I believe we have 11 states that have legalized recreational marijuana. 33 in total that have also, you know, done the medical marijuana is legalized as well. Mm-hmm. Right now, according to Pew Research, 2/3 of Americans support legalization of marijuana. I can't imagine that at some point within our lifetimes, if not within the next decade or two, you're going to see nationwide legalization at some point. Which brings us to why we're having this conversation and why, if you are in, you know, a technology space where you might sell or be interested in selling the kind of technology that's needed in this market, you should be getting involved. Right now, last year, was cannabis was a $17.7 billion industry, according to Grandview Research. And they're projecting by 2027, it'll be a $74 billion industry. That is
Run that by me one more time.
$74 billion.
And it's currently at 17.
It's currently at 17 from last year. Yeah.
And in 10 years,
not even 10 years.
Seven years, we're going to be up to $74 billion. Now,
exactly.
Is that that's all cannabis?
I believe that's all cannabis related products. You get into like the CBD,
stuff like that as well,
which we've seen take off, and and doesn't have quite the restrictions or legalization issues that.
Wow.
That traditional, maybe, recreational or medical marijuana does. But even so, that's a huge growth in a relatively short time. I think any industry would be pretty excited about that.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to start things off by talking about the current marketplace. Dwayne, I'm going to let you lead off this conversation. Tell us a little bit about where the cannabis industry was pre-COVID, where it's at now because of it, and maybe get a little bit into the technology that is in use and how it differs from traditional retail.
Cool. So, I mean, you took a lot of what I was planning on saying.
Didn't mean to steal your thunder.
No. It's cool. It's Dave's laughing too much. It's 11 states and the District of Columbia where, it's fully legalized and then, 33 so that are medicinally. Mm-hmm. And, several have already put out RFPs. And so, we're helping along those lines as well. But when you look at the cannabis industry, it's kind of a bit of a hypocrisy here in the United States because federally it's illegal, yet every state, with the exception of one, Massachusetts in the beginning, every state named them essential businesses and had to remain open for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So where a lot of industries in retail are seeing diminished revenues, take traditional retail, things of that nature, because, they haven't been able to, stay consistently open. The cannabis industry is actually on pace to do 40% more year over year than 2019. So when you, it's by the end of this year, they anticipated to, do over $15 billion. And, when I refer to cannabis, it's purely the marijuana side. Most of them, separate the marijuana versus the hemp industry, because the hemp industry is now federally legal.
Right.
So, there are a lot of opportunities open to them, that aren't to marijuana. So when you look at just that as doing $15 billion this year, that's really nothing, not anything to laugh at. And then when you look at the amount of people that this industry is employing, it's actually one of the fastest growth segments for jobs. So you're looking at over 200,000, people directly related to the plant, grower, processors, retail associates, bud tenders, cannabis consultants, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you factor in the other industries that aren't directly but indirectly go with the cannabis industry, you're looking at over 300,000, and that's in 2019. And, yes, some places may have had to change a bit, in this environment, but it's still a hearty industry. I like to jokingly say it's a budding industry.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of opportunity, states like Illinois and Michigan, which went federally legal and, things haven't really got up to speed. You have other states from a medicinal standpoint, like Florida, Pennsylvania, Maryland and Oklahoma that are doing so much from a medical standpoint until they're offsetting the slow diminished returns in Illinois and Michigan, which are supposed to be two of the biggest cannabis areas.
Mm-hmm. Twain, is it true? I thought I read the other day that there were states during this COVID period that have allowed online ordering that previously hadn't.
Yes. You know, like right now, people are looking for as many solutions from a contactless, you know, perspective. And maybe you could talk about that, Dave.
Yeah, it is becoming, we have quite a few customers now that are actually doing e-commerce, a hold for pickup at stores. And we're also now trying to introduce a way to be able to take payment online. To really make the process really quick and smooth at the retail store, at the cannabis store.
Dave, is that something you guys are building into your product now as a piece of it, or is it something that sits next to your main point of sale system?
As far as the e-commerce is built into it, the payment portion of it, is, of course, it's kind of still a challenge because of federally illegal. So we're kind of working through that as far as making the payment process easier.
Yeah, because right now it's a technically a cash only industry.
Well, it's majority cash.
Right. Okay. Like I know credit issues are a big problem.
Credit issues are some of the problem. You know, another part of the problem is some of these guys have been cultivating and growing for a while, as well as some of the end users, and so they've been operating under a totally illegal, mm-hmm. Standpoint. So you have, and speaking with some dispensary owners, you have a great percentage that don't even want to show a driver's license because they're, concerned that if this, if the federal government changes and mm-hmm. makes this illegal, now they can get me. Mm-hmm. And so, a lot of those guys will intentionally pay cash, for part of that reason. Now, granted, the banking rules and things like that are the majority, because, all of the states collect taxes and revenues off of this product, and yet they can't operate like a normal business. They have to, in the past has been, offshore banking, shell companies, things like that, mm-hmm. trying to get, the experience that traditional retailers have, where people can use credit and ACH payments, mm-hmm. Trying to get that. And so, it's clearly, I think as this industry matures, that's one of the things that's going to have to happen. And, I think I'm seeing where more and more banks are willing to assume, a higher level of risk on this simply because, a lot of these guys, even though they sell the plant and stuff like that, some of them may never even physically touch it. So, mm-hmm. It's kind
of... That definitely adds a complicated element to the whole industry, right? The whole banking and Dave, you said that talk to us a little bit more about how you're addressing it from a product standpoint. I mean, that's got to be a game, right? How do you play this game of not knowing, who's what banks, et cetera? And how does cryptocurrency move into it and those types of things?
Yeah, it's interesting because right now, we have some really progressive customers out there, cannabis retailers out there that are looking at simplifying the process for the consumer. The challenge is making it so, really, if you think about it, when you go into a cannabis retailer, they have ATM machines. So you pretty much take the ATM money out and then pay for the goods. The problem is because of the volume that a lot of these stores do, they can't keep up with putting money in the ATM machines. So they have full-time employees just, replenishing the cash in the machines.
Wow.
So it's a real challenge. So now it's they're going to the voucher system where you go in, you put your cash in, your credit card, and you get a voucher that you can go up to the register. But it becomes challenging as far as it doesn't deal with change and so forth. So some of the more progressive ones are looking at other solutions. And it's, I know Dwayne's been involved. We've seen probably hundreds of so-called solutions for taking currency outside of cash, from Bitcoin to you name it. And there's few out there that are really the right solution. Mm-hmm. And I think we might have found one, but we're actually kind of digging into it. I think we're on a call today with Dwayne to kind of go through it all, but it's, we have a customer right now is doing about 2,000 transactions online per day. And they launched their website maybe 4 weeks ago. So that's the consumer demand where they really want to go and place an order online and do curbside pickup once they go through the check-in process. But they want to streamline the process where they don't have to wait in line, they don't have to wait to go in the store. But the big thing is paying online. They still have to actually transact the business when they go in. So they have to go in the store, the goods are ready, but they still have to actually pay for it at the store. Mm-hmm. So having some sort of solution for payment online is going to really expedite the whole process. And that's going to be the game changer, I think, for cannabis. Yeah. Having it so it can be really quick. You can do the business online, pick it up at the store, and walk out.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's interesting when you talked about how progressive this industry is because, I remember when I started at Blue Star 6 years ago, people were talking about RFID and what's the next best thing, and mm-hmm. Everything's too expensive, they don't want to deploy the technology, it's too cutting mm-hmm. edge. And one of the things that's really great about this industry is where a lot of the end user business is driven by baby boomers. Mm-hmm. The actual industry yep. itself has is very millennial driven, so these guys are thinking of different ways. And they're willing to spend the money if it just, if it's justified in operational efficiency and things like that. Mm. And so, when I look at it and I think about all of the opportunity from, security cameras, digital mm-hmm. signage, kiosks, mobile handheld computers, RFID, this is, it's like right in the sweet spot of all of our products. Mm-hmm. And so, as I think about, opportunities for resellers, I would, say, give this, industry, a look. It's not without its challenges, as I'm sure Dave would tell you, and you really have to pack your patience, right, Dave?
Yes, yes. There's a unique group of retailers out there, from the small retailers just starting off, to the larger one that's actually kind of they're doing a lot of acquisitions, buying up small ones and taking over. But it's interesting. The most interesting thing about a lot of the retailers is that they're very focused on making sure that the whole journey of the customer is really seamless and really easy. So they're really solution driven. The challenge is trying to put everything together where they don't know where to go for the help. Or where to go for the solution. So it's really piecemeal and there's no integration between the different systems. A lot of them aren't really retailers that got into cannabis. They're either investors or individuals that really see an opportunity with cannabis that kind of step into it. So they need a lot of help as far as helping them provide a complete solution. So it's kind of interesting though. But they really focus on the customer segment, which is really the millennials that are driving the technology and the needs of technology.
So yeah, since we're talking about that, Dave, let's maybe take somebody through visually, about the dispensaries, because, a lot of times I remember I was at the RAD Expo in Portland and really great show. And as I was walking the show floor, I ran into this company where they designed buildings, like I think they said they did the M&M store in Times Square, that sort of thing. And so the lady who was in the booth, she was like, I have no idea why we're here, because these people, probably can't afford our services. And she said, nor are they going to want this design. And so I asked the lady, I said, she said, I'm assuming there's a lot of hip hop music and, like a rundown store. So I asked her, I said, have you ever been to a dispensary? She said, no. And I said, nothing could be further from what you've just described. Most of them, you know, have kind of like a more modern, sleek, for lack of a better word, an Apple-esque type type view. Mm-hmm. And so they want it open. They, you know, most of them, you know, want the aesthetics, you know, and I mean, they're very particular, even to the color of the point of sale system and things like that. And so, you know, I think, you know, some people may have one perception. And, you know, I've even been to one in Seattle where it was a dispensary and an art store, you know, like they had local artists and, you know, they would have, you know, I'm assuming, you know, like, you know, wine, you know, wine days where you could walk through there. And
so really get into that whole customer experience.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. I mean,
there's a premium being put on already on the customer experience.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And and are you seeing the same, Dave?
Oh, yeah, no question. It's when you walk into a cannabis retailer, it's an experience. When you walk in there, it's very interactive. The staff is very well trained. They're no longer called, you know, as they call them, bud tenders. They're now, you know, cannabis consultants. But it's sort of the whole world is changing for cannabis, where the clientele is different too. My first experience with one of our customers was my expectations were you'd see the young person going in and buying product, but I was blown away by the people that come in there, from, you know, little old ladies to people, you know, dressed up in suits, where it was a whole different perspective on the industry. And that was this was maybe 5-6 years ago. And since then, it's even changed, you know, it's progressed since then. But you walk in a cannabis store and just see the whole experience and how they treat customers. It's, I think if a lot of retailers actually paid attention to how a cannabis retailer does it and they follow suit, it would really help their industry too. So it's kind of interesting.
They were given a unique opportunity in a way, right? Where there's all these revolutions happening in traditional retail. You know, like the omni-channel discussion, being able to kind of have one experience no matter what your platform is. And then these guys came in. And Dave, to your point, a lot of them first-time retailers, but not necessarily all of them. Mm-hmm. But even the first-time retailers can say, okay, we're just starting now. Mm-hmm. Let's put in a strong foundation from day one. But as mentioned, they don't necessarily know where to go for that information. Who are the trusted people to come to? What are the trusted solutions? And that's why, as a marketing person, it's a huge opportunity, I think, for our entire channel.
Yeah, that's a great point, James, because, you know, with a lot of these guys, you know, they're millennials, and so they're used to going on the web, and they think they can find, you know, the solutions. And, you know, one of the platforms I've been advocating and evangelizing is using a reseller, because instead of purchasing consumer-grade equipment, you know, it's better to make the purchase one time and to purchase something that's going to grow, so to speak, as your business grows. You know, I recall going to a processor outside of Seattle, and as I walked through there, you know, we got to a room and there were a whole bunch of consumer-grade Brother printers, you know, that you could go to your Best Buy or anywhere and purchase, and they were all laying on the floor, you know, and it had to be like 30 or 40 of them. And I asked the guy, I said, what are you guys doing with these? And he said, man, we haven't been able to get more than a couple weeks, you know, out of those print heads before they gunk up and everything because of the pollen and the dust.
Sure.
And so, you know, as we walked through, they ended up, you know, showing me that they had found this company, which happened to be Zebra Technologies, and they were loving those, you know, printers because, you know, they didn't have those problems.
They were built for the environment, right?
They were built for the environment. And then, you know, they've got that warranty, that printhead warranty protection plan. So as long as you use their supplies, then, you know, they'll guarantee it for life. And so being able to, you know, talk to a trusted advisor like, you know, Dave and the guys at RCS, you know, could potentially save, you know, someone in the cannabis industry, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, not to mention man hours and things like that, troubleshooting something that's really not built for what you're trying to do. And most of them have, you know, digital signage. and it's consumer grade TVs, mm-hmm. you know, and so you can't run the same software, give it that uniform feel. So, you know, I really believe, and, you know, you could back me up or not, Dave, as far as the value and having trusted advisors and, you know, as minimal contacts as possible.
Right.
Yeah, I think we've, you know, kind of established that there's a weird stigma around the industry in general, but in particular, it's a lack of knowledge about, mm-hmm. you know, what do these stores look like? What do they do? How do they function? Dwayne, who's you mentioned, clientele? I don't remember if we were actually recording it or not, but at some point you kind of made the comparison to Prohibition days.
Oh, yeah.
And in the sense that, you know, back then, like, you know, obviously, like, very innovative people found very creative and innovative ways to sell alcohol. But, you know, now, like, we're not talking about necessarily that because, you know, this is happening in states where it is legalized and it is acceptable. So we're not talking about speakeasies that are hidden away, tucked into a basement somewhere that you got to rap three times and give a password. You know, these are nice upscale facilities, and there's no reason that, you know, people should be afraid of going in there and selling to them, because it's going to be a lot different than they expected.
Well, the only downside in this industry as it relates to that is that, you know, and I believe Illinois is trying to be the first state to fully embrace full rec to the point where, you know, they were talking about having a dispensary on the Magnificent Mile, you know, where a lot of times, you know, these dispensaries are off the beaten path, mm-hmm. In industrial areas. And so you can't really get that full, you know, retail feel like you would, you know, if you were on Fifth Avenue in New York or something like that.
Right.
And the crazy thing is, you know, there's this perception that having a dispensary in your area, you know, would increase crime, when in actuality they found the opposite. You know, I've yet to go to a dispensary that doesn't have armed security, you know, on the premises at all times. I mean, security cameras, you know, you name it, inside and out.
There's a lot of cash there, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, and not just that, you know, to Dave's point earlier, these guys are very customer focused, so mm-hmm. they want to make sure that their customers feel safe, secure, mm-hmm. you know, because right. you know, if you get mugged coming off of that property, what's the chances you're going to go
sure.
back there
right.
again?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's dive a little bit more into the technology side, because I think that there's some nuggets there. Can we spend a little? Let's just spend a little bit of time talking about all the kinds of technologies that are involved in the industry, Dwayne, because you rattled them off there pretty quickly a little bit ago. But let's go back to some of that stuff, because I think it truly is eye-opening to consider. And when you consider about, obviously, Blue Star's customer base, we have a variety of resellers. You know, those that play in mobility, those that play in ADC, those that play in POS, digital signage, networking. There's a play here for everybody, right?
Right.
Yeah. So walk us through some of those real quick. Let's start with a camera, right? So you've got security.
Yes, yes. I have yet to see any part of the cannabis industry that doesn't have security cameras. And then you also have access control. Some of your better growers mm-hmm. Regulate who can come in and out mm-hmm. and at what times because of the needs of the plant. RFID, because at least in metric states, you're required to have RFID tags on the plant.
Let's dive in there a little bit, because that was a learning for me. So yeah. You're saying from the beginning of the grow process on, you know, we are tracking the asset, if you will. Or
correct.
The plant. Yeah.
They literally call it seed to sale mm-hmm. because they have to track each piece of that. And, you know, and so it ultimately determines the quantities and things like that as far as what the state can get for compensation. So, you know, and now, you know, I'm even hearing where, you know, some of the, you know, since we're talking RFID, some of the, you know, dispensary owners are looking at RFID within the dispensary, you know, for, mm-hmm. You know, quicker mm-hmm. and more accurate track and traceability, mm-hmm. As well as being able to, you know, quality control the product, because in most states, you can't keep that product on the shelf more than 90 days. Mm. So, you know, as it gets to, you know, let's say 60 days, they can, you know, put the RFID gun into Geiger counter mode with mm-hmm. that date, and then they can pull any inventory in the event that it's, you know, gotten that old, so that they don't either, you know, have to deeply discount it or dispose of it. But
Dwayne, real quick, I just want to mention before I forget, I had read an analogy made. It was in Forbes in 2018, and it was a founder of a pretty well-known ISV in the space. And he made the comparison that if cannabis were coffee, you'd be tracking every bean, no yep. matter if that bean was brewed into a normal cup of coffee or an espresso or a pumpkin spice latte. You yeah. have to account for every one of those beans. So, I mean, it gives you an idea of what a burden it is for the people in the industry, but it also gives you an idea of the importance and the opportunity there is for people who
Bingo.
Specialize
the
in
opportunity,
ADC.
Right?
Right. Yeah. Whether it be yeah. RFID, traditional barcoding, but
I mean that's right in a lot of our customers' wheelhouse. Yeah. Oh, we got to track things. Yeah, we know how to do that.
We've been doing this
right.
for yeah. 50 years.
We got a customer on here who one of our resellers right? who could speak to that. Yeah. Tell us about it, Dave.
But inventory control. I mean, there's gosh. I want to step back too. Is it's interesting that the stigma of walking into a cannabis retailer is it's changed so much because you know walking into it, at least my first time in there I was really kind of it's almost walking into this weird I don't compare to walking into a porn store where did anyone see me right. walking into it. And it's just really strange, you know, but now it's become such a mainstream thing. As well, especially now with masks, everyone can wear masks to walk into a cannabis store.
The most masked really, stores on the planet. Yeah.
Incognito.
Yeah, sure.
yeah. Imagine yeah, sure. working at a
but
bank.
I think as far as the controls yeah. that they have to go through and also us as far as what we have to do as far as integrating to all these tracking systems, and how they control inventory is something that other retailers should learn as far as how to control inventory, how to turn inventory, how to track inventory. I mean, it's so critical for them to know exactly what they have in stock, to know the shelf life of the product. They move inventory from the floor to the locked room at the end of the day, so they know exactly what went into the room at the end of the day. So they don't want to keep it on the floors. But it's so critical that they track everything because everything's reported to the state systems where it's mission critical for them, where a lot of other retailers, if they could control inventory by gosh, 10% mm-hmm. or increase turns, you know, every year, you know, by 4 or 5 times, it would make a big difference as far as retail in general. So
I can just imagine the trickle down that's going to happen, right? You know, the yep. just the amount of effort and technology and the whole process that's being worked through in the cannabis industry will trickle down into other industries.
Yeah, I agree. Say.
Well, one of the hidden gems in this industry, you know, that a lot of resellers haven't, you know, really looked at is media and supplies, so labels and mm-hmm. things like that, mm-hmm. because yep. every single thing in this industry, everything has to have a barcode on it, you know, mm-hmm. be it RFID or, you know, non-RFID. Mm-hmm. And most of them are labeled multiple times.
Yeah, when mm-hmm. it changes format, right? When
yeah.
it goes from flour to a
yep.
whatever, mm-hmm. another kind of product.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And so, you know, I mean, you know, that's an area, you know, where people, you know, we often think of, you know, all of the physical hardware without, you know, getting down to something as simple as labels, but also as valuable, you know, because, you know, one could argue if you don't have labels in this industry, you won't have a license, that's mm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the regulatory aspect of this and the fact that I think from what my understanding is most states have different regulations.
Yes.
I know they kind of like, you know, there's stuff like metric that's out there, whatever, to kind of give a guideline, but only some states have adopted that. Mm-hmm. And I know like when I was, Cordy, you and I worked on a campaign, this has been maybe a couple of years back now, that was about labeling. You know, just even the basic labeling, just in the retail environment of labeling, you know, a bag of gummies or something, you know, mm-hmm. or a, you know, or a particular strain or something that, as you mentioned, all these different barcodes, but also even the labeling, like every single state had different stipulations or regulations for exactly what kind of, you know, symbology needed to go on there, like exactly what the shape of the sign telling you that it had THC in it or something yeah. had to be like, it was very dramatically different for every single one of them. So Dave and maybe Cordy, mm-hmm. you can hop in on this one too, but Dave, I kind of want you to ask you like, how does that affect what RCS does and what, you know, VARs that are wanting to sell into this space are doing, knowing that every state's got something a little bit different and you've got to pay attention to a lot of different regulations.
You do, yeah. And the most common is metric that we've worked with, but there are a lot of different state systems out there. And I think one thing that we've realized is that a lot of the retailers, cannabis retailers, have non-standardized equipment, where like Dwayne was saying, they pretty much buy it wherever they can buy it online. Same thing with labeling. And it's most of the products that they've purchased up to date has been non-retail hardened systems. So I think it's important for us as a value-added reseller is really making sure that we promote the fact that we're value-added, that we can help them standardize equipment, help them standardize label formats, help them create label formats. I think that's probably the key is trying to work with them as far as that, you know, what we do is to help you create standards so you can actually fulfill your obligations to the consumer, which is key, where they don't have to worry about the technology aspects of it and the labels, and we can help them create formats and standardize the formats. And right now it's interesting, you go in a store and to date there has been no standard. You know, they might be using Zebra printers, others might be using whatever Brothers that they bought online. And I think that's the key is, not that it's hard for us, because that's what we do, is create label formats for customers. But when they try to do it on their own is when it becomes challenging. I think that's the key for all of us, is helping create standards.
Right. Let me ask you this, Dave. Do you find that... until they run into some challenges, with either, compliance, with they're not reporting the correct data, that sort of thing, or with the hardware, is that when they, is that when they tend to reach out more if they have a little pain point?
Yeah, I think once they hit those pain points is when they start reaching out as far as creating standards. And to date, we've always believed that in order to actually, we want to provide a complete retail hardened solution for all our customers. So it helps us as far as supporting it. It also helps them as far as having standards. And if there's an issue, we can actually take care of it. And I think what we found out is there's such a hodgepodge of equipment out there that they utilize. And then when there's an issue with it is when it becomes a panic situation where they call us. And then we go through the process of, trying to create a standard.
Yeah, I've never understood, why those guys, they spend so much money on the grow and on the processing side. And then some of them, really look to cut corners inside the dispensary, what I've found from being out there is that a lot of these guys, like you said, they put a hodgepodge mix of something together. And then, as they stay open and they start growing, then they realize, this isn't the right thing. It's not robust enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to get something better. And so, that's why, when I see Dave, and his team out at shows, they're showcasing, premium equipment, things that, you might spend a little bit more on the front end, but, it's going to be something as your business expands that can expand with you. And then, I gotta imagine, Dave, your customers like having, one contact that they can reach out to, who could pretty much assist them with most things.
Right. Yeah. One hand to shake. I think that's the key, is making sure they have one person they can call and take care of their, It's interesting. I think they're slowly starting to come around. And I think the biggest thing is I think what I've noticed is that they always look at, they really focus on getting the grow, set. And then the point of sale, the front of the house is always the afterthought. It's like, okay, so we need to get something in there. And they don't do their due diligence as far as finding the right solution and the right technology. Then it becomes a challenge where they realize that their business usually flourishes really quick, and they're already behind the curve as far as getting the right equipment in place.
So we've talked a lot about, you know, kind of the environment and setting the stage. But as I put my reseller hat on, you know, so, okay, I get it. You know, society's changing. There's an opportunity here. How do I start? How do I get involved to start leveraging my skills as a reseller in this marketplace? And Dave, maybe you can, because obviously you have the experience of getting into this industry. I'm wondering, I mean, are there associations that, that resellers should go to? I mean, how would they start dipping their toe and getting involved so that they can engage, you know, the person who's starting a dispensary or whatever, to so that they can be there as that consultant? Do you have any advice on that front?
Yeah, there's a couple of companies out there we can actually work with as far as being a reseller. We can become and get lists as far as upcoming stores that have licenses out there waiting for it to get approved. I also think probably one of the biggest things is trying to get ahead of them, which is trying to figure out a way to be able to do education, to really educate them on the technologies that are available for them. And also, you know, the retail hardened technologies that are available for them. So we've been doing more and more education, inviting people to come in, been doing webinars and posting them out there. And I think that's probably been the most successful for us. It's interesting, you know, the whole journey as far as when we first got into this, it was a scary journey when we first decided to actually start selling in the cannabis space. We got approached 7-8 years ago, and for us to get into it was, there's all these things that came up where, you know, the developers didn't want to touch it because they're worried about it, trying to figure out how we're going to get paid for it. There was all these concerns as far as, you know, what will our customers think, you know, our existing customer base. Yep. So it was a really scary endeavor, and just recently, it's becoming more mainstream. Is we're taking it, our existing platform, which is Anthea for the cannabis industry, bringing it into our normal, you know, RCS fold, which I think we might have some customers out there that might be offended by it, but we decided it's time to do it. But it's as far as getting into the industry, it's, I think probably the easiest thing is, and I can, if anyone wants to reach out to me, I can send them a couple of publications that are available out there. They can actually sign up for and get information as far as upcoming dispensaries that are opening up. Mm-hmm. It's getting your foot in the door is the challenge. And there's so many different point of sale applications out there. It's challenging with all the different POS systems that are being out there that haven't been around for a long time, so they're really sexy, but there's really no sizzle to them. You know, there's no depth to the product.
There's not a lot of track record to go off of.
No,
either,
yeah,
right?
Not at all. Yeah.
Hey, real quick comment. Yeah. Dave had mentioned that public information is available. Mm-hmm. So a few points maybe. We also look to leverage that information in terms of our end customer marketing. But not only is information about license holders or companies soon to be open available, but the non-compliance data is public. I don't know if that's true for all states, but I know, Dwayne, you and I had done some research for a campaign we worked on. I want to say it might have been Washington State, where you could go and look at kind of the wall of shame and see which businesses and for what reason they were dinged. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, I guess there's
two things.
Yeah, but
that's an opportunity is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what we uncovered actually was that video surveillance accounted for like 23% or like a pretty big chunk of those. Mm-hmm. So I guess you've got those two ingredients for big opportunity, which is they're highly regulated, and then there's penalties, severe penalties in some cases around non-compliance. So not great for the people trying to, you know, make a living in this industry. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's one of those things where you feel bad to call it an opportunity, but it's a challenge, and therefore problem solving is needed. Yeah. So wanted to mention that. So I also would be remiss not to mention, I think it was, a year and a half, if not 2 years ago now, we put together a guide for our customers. And I've actually got it pulled up here. It was called The Cannabis Industry, What's the Opportunity for Resellers? Mm-hmm. So we've touched on most of them, I think, and looking at, you know, point of sale, RFID, digital signage for menu boards, surveillance. I don't think we touched on networking. Mm-hmm. So whether it be network security or even cellular failover, which every retailer should have in place, you know, on the retail side. And then on the grow side, access control, ID badges, I don't think we mentioned. You know, in some cases, the way that these systems work, systems like Metric or even RFID systems that feed into systems like Metric, because Metric is the reporting body, right? And a lot of people use different suites like Anthea to collect the data that then gets reported through an integration or manually into Metric. In some cases, using an ID badge with an RFID tag could be a way to say, James went into, you know, the flowering room and grabbed these two plants and brought them over here. And because I have a tag in my badge, you don't have to manually record that. It knows, okay, there's a tag on the plant. I have a tag, so you know who took it, what they took, and where it went. And all of those things can be recorded in the system, which is pretty cool. But a lot of these things, many of these things, not only are they needed, but it's not really a choice in a lot of cases.
No, that's what I'm learning.
It's mandated.
Is that, yeah, it's a regulation.
Yes.
So
it is just a matter of getting in front of the
and
people.
And what the VAR community can bring is efficiencies to a lot of this, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
And then Dave mentioned education. I'll go into that when we start talking specifically about marketing. But because there is lack of consensus. There's not a lot of track record with, you know, from point of sale, which might be one of the older, more mature technologies in the space by now, but really across the board, people need to be educated, which is why it is a perfect fit for content marketing, which is our bread and butter. It's what we do. And the last thing I want to note, and this is better spoken to by both of you guys other than me, but I at least wanted to bring it up, that there is a cultural piece to this, meaning there is a, hey, the suits are coming. You know, they know, the people who have been in this industry, who are of this industry, know that there's huge monetary, you know, potential here. And they are not closed off to outsiders, but they're weary of them. Meaning if you're just here to exploit us or to try to get a piece of the pie, you know, let us know you're here to help. So I think that's something that...
That right there is probably one of the biggest challenges of getting into the industry.
For VARs, right?
Yeah, for resellers, because... you know, this industry more so than most I've ever, you know, dealt with is very network driven, who you know. And, you know,
Trust.
Yeah. You know, and word of mouth is tremendous in this industry.
Yes.
You know, if you please one, you know, person, they go out and they tell, you know, they give other CEOs your number. The hardest thing in this industry, and, you know, people that look at these license databases and things like that, you know, I take it with a grain of salt, because the chances of you getting to that license holder, even if you have their information, is slim to none. Because most of the time, and, you know, Dave could probably attest to this, as they're even walking shows, they won't give you a card or anything, you know. A lot of them do not want to be bothered.
Hey, don't call us, we'll call you.
Right. You know, but when
they
do call, you know, it's the house is on fire, we need something immediately, you know, in a lot of instances it's just like that. And so, you know, that's why I said you have to pack your patience, because this isn't going to be an industry where you go out there and you say, hey, you know, what am I going to get this week? You know, it may be, you know, 6 months or more, you know, before you get the PO or before, you know, they trust you enough, you know, that sort of thing. And so, you know, that's why, you know, I say you have to, you know, pack your patience. Then, you know, also be connected to the right, you know, right people. And I think, you know, here at Blue Star, you know, putting Blue Star hat on, you know, we can help you with all of that. James and myself, you know, we've done substantial marketing within this industry and you know, have a good idea, a good concept as far as, you know, what works, what doesn't. You know, we have relationships with all of the major periodical, you know, companies. And I would encourage a reseller to, you know, go out there, go to Cannabis Dispensary Magazine, go to Cannabis Business Time, MJ Biz Daily. A lot of them have, you know, free digital versions, and you can, you know, Marijuana Venture, Gondrepreneur, you know, I'm trying to think of them off the top of my head.
Got a bunch of them.
But those guys are, it's business focused. So, you know, it's not going to be, you know, like some of the other periodicals where they're more consumer focused and, you know, consumption of the plant, that sort of thing. You know, these magazines are giving you a perspective, you know, from within the industry. And, you know, I'll shut up after, you know, I'll give you guys three shows that normally, you know, pre-COVID, I consider, you know, great shows to go to. The Cannabis Conference that's put on by GIE Media, you know, great conference to go to, you know, for educational content, things like that. NCIA, the National Cannabis Industry Association, that's another good one because those guys do a lot of the lobbying and, you know, things as far as, you know, moving it. And then the show of shows is MJ BizCon, which is the largest cannabis show.
It's an impressive show.
Yeah, before they were taking over the Vegas Convention Center. Cordy went out there with me last year, and
I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah,
quite frankly. I mean, the meaning. I had my preconceived notions going in, similar to what people think when they're going to walk into a dispensary, I guess. And I knew, I had a pretty good idea that there was some real business going on here. But when you walk in and see some of these booths, I've described them a bunch of times, not in the negative way. It was almost like a science fair project where it's like they must have spent 3 days setting up this intense. I mean, it's just very technical, especially on the cultivation processing side where it, it was eye-opening. It was, I mean, it was just a enormously large show, too.
I've never seen a show, you know, like that. You know, and I've gone to CES, which is, you know, definitely bigger. But, you know, to James's point, you know, when you look at some of the equipment that these guys are, you know, bringing in, you're like, oh, my God, this is a lot more in depth.
Well, I think it speaks to the whole fact that the industry has, it's so multifaceted. You've got from seed to sale. I mean, literally the whole thing. So when you, it makes sense, I've never been to it, but I totally get it that if I'm going to a cannabis show, we've got all the display, all the technologies on display.
Yeah, there's retail design firms, there's attorneys and financial companies, and it's the whole game.
That's crazy.
So I want to wrap this main conversation.
The cool thing about you is that the excitement behind it.
The energy, if you will. Yeah.
The excitement and stuff, and the excitement and the energy. It's just, it's a whole. I haven't done so many shows over the years and stuff, and it's some of the shows are just so dreary. And but once you go to Cannabis Store, it's like being reborn. It's like, oh my God, there's so much excitement, so much energy, and they're looking for solutions.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, I want to wrap up this main conversation with a couple quick questions with Cordy here. Because we talked a lot already about the marketing side of things and focused on that, but I know you probably have some special insight on, you know, where marketing can matter, what a difference it can make, because this is somewhat of an underserved market from a marketing perspective. You know, Dwayne, you mentioned like the reticence that some of these people have with actually getting contacted. So effective marketing from a trusted source can make a big difference. James, tell us a little bit more about maybe what we've done and what you've been involved in so far.
Sure. So it's an interesting landscape right now in that a lot of the places we would typically go for, you know, traditional retail or supply chain or healthcare, or any other kind of campaign, end customer focused campaign we would run, it's very simple to set up targeting in a way where you know exactly who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. Outlets like Facebook and like LinkedIn haven't quite made it that easy yet, even though the industry's growing at a rapid pace and there's a lot of people out there. You have to get, well, I guess it's a bit more basic. And by that I mean, instead of relying on some of this fancy targeting based on somebody's job title or the industry that they're a part of, we are relying largely on these media outlets and associations like the ones Dwayne mentioned a minute ago. And to kind of tie in Dave's point, we have noticed that content marketing, by which I mean creating content for the purpose of education, you know, so it would be the cultivation guide to track and traceability, and then outlining it, truly outlining for them, giving them value, helping them understand by pulling from different credible sources, these are the best practices we're aware of today. But also, you know, peppering in there a bit of our brand message. So whether it's usually our vendors, but also our ISV partners as well, to say, hey, this is the way you should go about it. Here are the people that can help. Mm-hmm. There is so much excitement, to Dave's point, in this industry that, you know, an email blast that we would do to an outlet, a professional association that would usually net us 50 to 75 downloads. John, you know, you do this every day as well. Might mean 300 to 500 downloads for a similar cost to a similar size group. So it's not that there's 200,000 subscribers of MJ Biz, it's that there's 30,000, but they're opening it at a much higher rate. They're clicking through on messages that are relevant to them at a higher rate and ultimately saying, yes, I'll give you my information in exchange for this piece of content.
Well, it's validation that the education is such an important component, right?
100%. Right. And then I think, you know, depending on how you do it, and the details are important, which is, you know, another podcast, another day, permission-based marketing is a big buzzword, which means you're looking for someone to say to you, yeah, you could give me a call about this. So that's where we try to get. Whereas we might get 500 people to download an ebook, an e-guide that we put together. What we're trying to do is get 10 or 12% of those people to then go a step further and go, interesting. Who are the guys behind this? Sure, I'll schedule a meeting right now. You know, we're using some cool stuff like chatbots to make that happen. But so to get a little bit more specific, we have done over the last year, probably 10 or so campaigns. You know, we're being choiceful about the partners we work with. And, you know, there are only so many areas, so to speak. But we've seen a lot of interest in track and traceability on both sides of the business. By that, I know there's more than two sides, but cultivation and retail, everyone's interested in knowing, you know, from, again, from a credible source, what's the best way to do it? What are the tools that I should be looking at? Online ordering, we kind of mentioned earlier, especially with you know, the pandemic happening, that's a big piece. People are curious about how to, you know, offer their menu online, how to sync it with what they have in store. And then DIY labeling. So Dave made brought up some great points, whether it's DIY or managed service labeling, but how do we become more efficient, spend less money, and make sure that we are compliant? So John, to your point, I remember that guide you mentioned earlier. Basically what it was is we were, again, trying to pull the important, most recent information from people who mattered. I think is it NCIA? What's the name of the organization you mentioned, Dwayne?
The National Cannabis Industry Association.
NCIA, okay. Mm. So I believe there were some folks from that organization and another that had basically formed a committee around labeling. And now in Canada, and Dave and Dwayne, correct me if I'm wrong here, in Canada it is nationwide standardized.
Correct.
So they drew from Canada, they drew from California and Colorado and all the different states who have, you know, been doing this for a while. And in essence, that's what we try to share them is, hey, if you're going to go do this yourself, here are what all of the people who know what they're talking about are saying you should include. So yeah, that was one of our top two campaigns in terms of, you know, volume of leads. So it was very clear people were interested in just knowing what they should be doing, whether or not they wanted to do it themselves. But there were definitely some small to medium-sized operators looking for the, you know, can I afford to do this in-house? What do these printers cost? What kind of volume can they handle? So on and so forth. So those are some of the key areas we've been focused.
The one thing I would say is, you know, like if you are looking to market at this industry, you know, certain technologies, you know, gravitate to people more than others. I think point of sale on its own is just pretty much beat to death in this industry. You know,
it's
everybody's
very competitive too.
Yeah, everybody's put that out there. But if you can talk about, you know, not only your point of sale, but, you know, kiosk and queue management, you know, digital signage, the more you can include in that, the more, you know, we're then becoming solution, you know, based and a truly value-added reseller versus, you know, just putting things together and just talking about the hardware.
You reminded me to mention video surveillance. We've said it one or two times already, but if that's an area you play in, that's a big opportunity. There's a lot of people that need help there, and I haven't come across a ton of marketing and companies who kind of have that right size solution, again, for the small to medium-sized companies. So that would be something worth looking into.
Awesome. Well, listen, this has been an amazing conversation. We do want to shift over to our recurring segments. Before we get to that, first of all, I want to mention some of the associations and resources that Dwayne and James have both mentioned. I want to put that stuff in the show notes. So if you are interested in reaching out to some of those organizations or just checking out some of those newsletters, look in the show notes for this episode. You'll find some of that information there.
And we're going to put Dwayne's cell phone number in the
show
notes.
Sure, yeah.
So people can just call him directly.
You know, I don't know that he would actually have a problem with that. I think he'd love to have these conversations.
No, he wouldn't. No, he was. I mean, not like that. I mean, I'd love to have those conversations, just not like that. Can we put? Last year we did a cannabis seed to sale tech guide done for.
We'll put a link to that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, we'll link out to that too. Definitely. Yeah.
You know, I think that'll help resellers. Not only will it show them, you know, some of the hardware that's being utilized, but it also shows them what parts of the industry they are. So. Mm-hmm.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
It would be pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, definitely. But if any of our listeners have some additional thoughts, questions, success stories, they want to reach out, you can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod. You can also email us, TechConnect@BlueStarInc.com. As I mentioned, I want to wrap up with our two recurring segments, Value to the VAR and What's Tech Connecting with Us. So Value to the VAR, this is where we're going to take our entire conversation and compress it into a little bit of a talking point and answer a question for our VAR listeners. My question today is, how does Blue Star assist our VARs with entering the cannabis space? For Dave, you know, maybe you can talk a little bit about how we've assisted you and how we've worked with RCS so far. So I'll let you start off. What have we done for you? Where do you think Blue Star fits into this?
It's all Dwayne.
Once again, Dwayne's cell number will be in the show notes.
No, I think probably the biggest thing for us is understanding that it's important for us to create a standard. I think it's probably one of the biggest things as far as working with Blue Stars, as far as creating standardized hardware or standardized bundles that we can offer our customers. And again, it's like best of breed to make sure that when we actually present a solution to the customer, that it's something that's been tried and tested, and it's going to be something that's going to have minimal impact as far as any potential technology challenges. So I think that's probably key. That's really helpful as far as working with Blue Star, as far as getting that package together, that bundle together. Trying to make it so it's, I think what we've been doing is looking at the whole journey of a customer, as far as a consumer, from online to queue management, to having the kiosk capabilities, interface the digital cameras, so it's live feed to the cameras, to the digital displays, interface the cameras. So I think it's just working with Blue Star to help us kind of create a comprehensive solution for the retailers. I think what we've done in the past as far as being value-added resellers is we've become so focused on just one piece, which is just point of sale. I think that's been kind of our main focus, where now it's, I think COVID's helped us, where now you have to actually step back and think about the whole journey and what can we do to help a retailer. And I think that's key. And Blue Star has been really helpful as far as helping us with that.
Great. Dwayne, what about you? What do you think we offer in this space to help out VARs?
Well, I think, definitely some of our marketing assets, AppWare Solutions. Yeah. If it's a software vendor that's, looking for a channel solution, which is a conversation I really like to do, at another time. What we could do is, we could help them, with, things like VARcom to help them, get a webinar to drive reseller attendance, that sort of thing. I've been working with Dave for, what's it been, about 3 years now. And so, what was really great is, initially when we started, we talked about cannabis bundles and then retail bundles. And then watching how, over the years, those kind of merged into one. And so, from a reseller perspective, if you're offering, great products and things like that, then what happens is it transcends across all aspects of retail. Mm. And so, those plug and play, and, it's less that you have to support. And so, it's been, a really good journey. One of the things I love about this industry is that even, some of the competitors, in the evenings, everybody can get together and share war stories. It's a very open and embracive, community. And so, I would say, reach out to any of us. We'd be willing to, help you to get started, see, if it's, really for you, and how, we can, put your solution and separate it from some of the others, because mm-hmm. there's plenty, of opportunity. And we saw, earlier when John gave us the revenue projections, mm-hmm. there's plenty of money out there also.
No doubt.
Yeah. James, what about you?
I'll keep mine bullet format. I think we can help resellers understand the marketplace, which we talked about quite a bit today, which I think is critical, mm-hmm. understanding who you're dealing with and appearing to be and actually being a real resource to mm-hmm. those people. I think we can help people understand where to look to understand the industry. So that's number one.
Because it sounds like authenticity is important.
Yes. Right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is true always, but especially there. They're just, so that's number one. Number two would be, not that we have a ton of software partners who are looking for a channel model. I think a lot of the people in the space currently, because it's a limited space right now, but we certainly have some who are looking for, you know, a few good VARs, as I'll put it. Mm-hmm. So whether that be geographically located in places where they can't reach, mm-hmm. maybe Canada, mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm.
And if I could interject into this, because it's a point I wanted to bring up earlier, and, you know, the topics change. What I would encourage resellers, one of the first things, you know, what I've noticed is in traditional retail, they tend to lean on how long the company has been in business and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. You know, we've been around 50 plus years.
Right. Yeah.
And speaking with some of the software vendors, you know, especially, you know, like pure ISVs in this space, that is an immediate turnoff for them because mm-hmm. they look at it as someone who's rigid, you know, and not willing to be nimble mm-hmm. and change. And this is an industry where, you know, if you can't be nimble, then you're not going to last long, mm-hmm. you know, because it's always evolving. Something's always changing. And, you know, I anticipate it being that way until, you know, it's either federally legalized or decriminalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to be seen as force-fitting, you know, a tool into a space where it doesn't really fit.
Yeah.
Oh, we've got a WMS that you could use, you know, for track and traceability. I agree. The next one, Dwayne mentioned it, but marketing services, for those who aren't aware, we have a plethora of different marketing services at Blue Star. AppWare Solutions, the program that John and I manage, is end user focused. So if you are a VAR out there, if you already have a software partner, or if you're a hybrid, you know, VAR and ISV who's looking for help reaching those end users, and you partner with some of the hardware vendors that Blue Star carries, come talk to us. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this for a couple of years in this industry now. We can help out on that front. And then lastly, I thought about this on my way over here, which is true for hospitality. It's true for a lot of industries right now. Having the right size solution for the business. And that might mean functionality, but I'm really thinking about cost. And so we have a program called Hybrid SaaS. It's a little bit confusing, but what it means at Blue Star is you could take, if there's software involved, the software, any of the hardware pieces, you know, surveillance, network, bundle it, put it all in one piece, and then offer it to an end user. Mm-hmm. So whether it be a dispensary or, you know, a cultivation facility, at a monthly cost over the course of 3 years. Mm-hmm. So instead of it being, you know, a capital expenditure of $100,000, maybe it's a monthly fee over 3 years of $250. So it's really going to put you at a competitive advantage when you walk in the door and say, hey, you don't need to pony up all of this money now. I just need this much every month. And then after 3 years, we'll replace all of the equipment and come in. So something a lot of people don't know that Blue Star offers, it's called Hybrid SaaS. It's a creative financing program, something worth looking into.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And as I think about it, you know, what I wrote down, and I've circled it a couple times now, you know, when I think about it, and I put my reseller hat back on, resellers are consultants at the end of the road, right? So this is so much in the wheelhouse of our customer base of being able to walk in, talk about enterprise type solutions, ruggedized, whatever you want to call it, purpose built, consult these end users. There's a need. This is what I've learned. There is a definite need for that type of information, those types of solutions, to be able to walk in and to be able to give meaningful solutions that are going to last a long time, that can be financed with all. You've got all the tools that you need. Now we've learned, you know, as long as you're in the right network of people and you have authenticity around it, there's going to be some success. When I think back at the very beginning of this conversation, we talked about, you know, this societal stigmatism around the cannabis industry. And I know it still exists, right? There's many states that aren't legalized. And, you know, I don't know how many of them aren't. I had a map open, but it's a significant amount.
So, yeah, over half.
So Dave, there's still people in your shoes where you were seven, eight years ago who are holding back. Well, maybe I shouldn't, kind of a thing. I don't know. It just seems like we're getting a little bit better as a society, a little bit better in the sense that we're accepting
yes.
of the fact that this is coming down the road. So the opportunity is there. And the value to the VAR to me is maybe it's a mind shift that you personally might have to go through a little bit, you know, to get, hey, okay, whether you are against it or not, there's an opportunity there. There's a need in this community that can be served by a lot of our resellers. Might be something to consider. What are we going up to? 70 some odd billion here?
Yeah, 74 billion. Yeah, by 2027. Yeah,
that's a so B, that's, not an M.
That's a right. B. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, you figure almost 75% of the population now sees nothing wrong.
Yeah, exactly. 2/3.
You know,
yeah,
with legalized cannabis.
What do you? What'd you get, John? What value to the VAR?
You know, all I really have to add to this is because I kept thinking along the way, like there is. we talked a little bit about being genuine in this particular industry and like not looking like you're just coming in to piggyback. And I think a big part of it also is not coming in acting like hee hee weed, you know, which I know you cracked a joke earlier about a budding industry, and that's literally the only pot joke or like, you know, bud or weed joke or whatever we threw into this. And I think that's something important to think about is like, this is not a gag industry. It's not a comical
excellent
thing.
Right.
It's, you know, you don't walk in there and start cracking jokes about, you know, well, I want your business to go up and smoke, you know, or anything silly like that, because you're not going to look professional. You're going to look like someone who doesn't know what they're talking about.
I would tell, you know, one of the things I would say, you know, just piggybacking off of that is, you know, you've heard us refer to it as cannabis. I would refer to it that way from a professional standpoint, right, because it gets away from the negative, you know, stigma associated with the plant. And you're absolutely right. You know, I had a reseller one time who was saying, you know, like, oh, I know all about, you know, the weed industry. You know, I've smoked joints and, you know, I could talk to the people. That was not a reseller I wanted to sponsor at a show,
right,
you know, because if you're, you know, if you're talking like that, your booth is going to be, you know, pretty empty pretty quick. So, you know, yes, definitely treat it, you know, like the professional industry it is and the opportunity, you know, that's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Cordy and I, one of the marketing campaigns we worked on once upon a time, like someone provided us with a sell sheet or something, I believe, and it was filled with all of those punny kind of jokes. And I just remember us cringing at it. And I'm just like, oh man, like this is not something you want to put out there to promote yourself, because you're going to look like you're just a goofball that doesn't take this seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, let's wrap up with our last segment. It's called What's Tech Connecting With Us. Dean and I are going to opt out of this one because, one, we're running long, and two, we have to come up with these like every week. So we're going to give ourselves a break for one podcast and not talk about what's tech connected to us. But I want to ask the three of you, this segment, we talk about a piece of technology. It could be anything from a television show, a podcast, a game you're playing, just a cool piece of tech that you're using or have read about, something that's exciting and interesting to you. It doesn't have to have anything to do with what we've talked about today. James, I'm going to let you start on this one. What's tech connecting with you?
So I recently got a pellet grill.
Yes.
People have heard about Traegers.
Right.
Mine is not a Traeger. It's from a company called Camp Chef, and I'm shouting them out because I love it. It's really great. I don't do a lot of cooking around the house, mostly because my schedule just doesn't put me in a spot where I'm, you know, there for cooking dinner. So it's been really cool to feel like I'm contributing every now and again and actually cooking the meals, but I am just enjoying it so much. And it's, you know, it's almost not that technologically advanced, except it has the cool little panel where you set the temperature and then it reads out digitally, which seems like something so small, but it really does enable you to be pretty darn precise. And I've got all kinds of cool thermometers for the internal temperature of the meat. Right. My wife's like, yeah, I've had those.
You are getting geeky on this, aren't you?
A little bit.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. Totally. I can tell by your voice. Well, I'm kind of
because everything else in my life, I mean, like a lot of you guys, I've been spending a lot of time at home, a lot of time, you know, with my nose in my laptop. I haven't come across a lot of new stuff in the wild, but that's one thing that, I have been geeking out on. I'm
okay, so
it.
Do you have the app on your phone or on your watch yet where you can like see the meat and if it's what the temperature's
so
like?
So there is a Wi-Fi enabled version of mine. I don't have the Wi-Fi enabled model, but my wife
of
did
an
get
air
me.
Fryer?
No, of a it's a pellet
no,
grill.
Pellet oh, grill. Pellet grill.
So you can do normal grilling on it, but it has the pellets and it does smoking and all that kind of cool stuff.
Yeah.
I do have a Wi-Fi enabled thermometer. I got like three thermometers. Uh-huh. Only I didn't buy any of them. My wife bought me two of them, and two of them came with the thing. So
will it alert you when the meat is ready?
Or it will alert you if the temperature of the grill gets higher or lower than you've set it. So that's the whole thing about, you know.
Okay. Cordy is connected. I'm telling you, he's connected. Yeah. All right. So, what's the best thing you've cooked so far? What are you most proud of?
Ribs.
Ribs. Solid.
Nice.
Solid.
I expect a plate of ribs here the next time you come over. You're not allowed back.
I'm looking for excuses at this point to cook stuff. So.
All right. Well, there you go. Yeah.
Dwayne will make sure he shows up for that one too.
Yeah.
Even if it has nothing to do with him, he'll be here.
Right.
Dwayne, what's tech connecting with you right now?
Man, this went a completely different, you know, way than I was expecting. I was ready to talk, you know, like AR, AI, something like that.
You can go there.
No. I like the pathway where he's going, you know, like new tech in the house. So one of the things I bought was a Sonos wireless sound system. And let me tell you, one of our coworkers, Terry Barker, he was raving about his, so I got one, and I was trying to figure out a way to sneak it in the house, you know, like when my wife was gone.
So Kelly wouldn't know.
Yeah, okay. I could just switch everything out. And so she got mad one day, you know, looking at all of the cords and stuff like that, you know, behind the TV. And so, you know, she's upset. Why can't you straighten that out? And, you know, I finally got mad. I said, I got a whole new stereo system in the garage. So I went out there. She didn't believe me. I went out there, boom, brought it in, and I spent the day just disconnecting everything.
Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm.
And so now I get a better quality sound wirelessly than I ever did on some of the Harman, you know, card and other systems that I had. And I mean, I love it, you know. Now,
so what do you got, real quick? You got the satellites? You got the subwoofer going too? Or
I got the sub too.
You got the whole thing going. All right.
I got the sound bar. The bookshelf speakers.
Now hold on here. You're a fool for thinking you could get that in your house without Kelly knowing.
Oh yeah. Trust me. I had a Blu-ray player.
She's got it on her radar that any new technology for those of you that don't know Dwayne, he's into technology.
So I had a Blu-ray player for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And she finally came up one day and was like, do you think we should look at getting a Blu-ray player? I'm like, we already have one. You know, she's kind of along for the ride, man, as far as technology.
I thought she was super sensitive to that.
Like,
she's always watching you and what you're bringing in the
house. She just knows it works, you know?
Okay, all right, got it. So now you got this beautiful home theater system going on.
It is so nice.
The sound is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm an audiophile.
Next podcast is at Dwayne's house.
Yes.
With Riz.
With barbecue.
With Riz. Dave, what are you going to contribute? What's
I was going to be real boring and talk about an old bike, but I'll go on about the whole technology as far as stereo systems. So in Fort Collins, I found somebody who actually had a retail store as far as installing stereo systems. I contacted him. He's a retired IT professor at Colorado State, CSU. And he's coming here tomorrow to put a whole stereo system in, but it's just crazy, the whole technology, what he's going to put in place. But it's all going to be Sonos and all the speakers, but he's literally come online, had to actually pretty much measure the whole house and outdoor speakers. And he's going to come in with his wife and install everything tomorrow. So it'll be pretty exciting as far as...
You're going to love it, Dave. You know, that's actually one of the benefits of COVID for me, because you know, like this happened, you know, like last year when I got it, and around Black Friday, Sonos, you know, they put their stuff on sale, so I'll be looking to get more, you know, this November. But I was traveling a lot, and so you know, I was kind of teed off, you know. I'm like, wow, I got this great sound system, and my wife is the one that gets to enjoy
it. Can't enjoy it at all.
Yeah, so now, you know, I've been home more than I have in God knows how many years,
right?
You know, and I still can't enjoy it, you know, like I would want to, of course. But you're gonna love it, Dave, man. All the different zones, and when you put the whole house together, you know, oh man.
Yeah, we need to reach out to Sonos and get some of that money.
But Dave, I want to know about the bike. Wait a minute, where were we going to go with the old bike?
Yeah, so, it's interesting. I was in the bike industry years ago, and I had somebody build this custom bike for me. Gosh, probably 40 years ago. Okay. You
know, now, is it a road bike? We're talking a road bike here, Dave. Is it a road bike?
Road bike. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Road bike. But it's all, I don't know if you know, it's all campy components and stuff. So it's all, it goes back. And I finally got it on the road yesterday. So I went out for a ride yesterday on the bike. And it's amazing going back in time, where it's a steel frame. It's got the old components but it rides like a dream. And after riding all these, you know, carbon fiber bikes and getting beat up on the bikes and stuff, this is like riding a Cadillac. But it's fun taking it out yesterday, going for a ride yesterday and stuff. But I realize the gearing is a little bit different than what I'm used to now, because we've gotten spoiled over the years, you know, where now the gearing is, you know, there's a lot of mountains here in Fort Collins. So it was a little struggle going over some of the mountains yesterday with this really low gearing, or high gearing, as they would call it.
Cordy just got a bike recently, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Old vintage Cannondale from like the mid 80s or something.
What do you think about that, Dave? Nice. There you go. Yeah.
Wow. Man, I need to get on board with that.
They're coming back. I'm convinced all these old bikes are coming back. Like all the steel frames and stuff are coming back.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we could have easily talked about any of these topics that we've had today in an entirely different podcast, but it is time for us to unplug. I want to very much thank Dave Albert, Dwayne Roebuck, James Cordy for joining us today. We appreciate your insight.
Pleasure.
But you know, until next time, I'm John Martin for Dean Reverman. It's time for us to disconnect.
Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Elo. Are your customers looking for a versatile POS system designed to hold up to the daily continuous use? Show them the powerful Elo POS system. Purpose-built for point of sale, Elo POS offers flexibility, durability for traditional applications and self-service.
All units come with an 8th generation Intel processor, Wi-Fi and BLE 5.0 for third-party device connectivity, plus an integrated expansion hub ready for any and all peripherals like barcode scanners, customer displays, payment devices, and more. Elo POS is customizable for any situation, offering various mounting and desktop options along with 15 and 22 inch display choices.
Backed by a 3-year warranty, Elo POS is the retail hardened, modern, and reliable system. To learn more, contact your Blue Star representative or visit the Elo microsite at bluestarinc.com. The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Honeywell. The traditional in-store shopping experience is rapidly being replaced by consumers turning to buy online and pick up in-store, curbside pickup, lockers, and at-home delivery.
Guided work for retail allows for multiple forms of input, including voice data capture, barcode scanning, and keyboard data entry, which improves productivity, accuracy, and consistency.
Contact your Blue Star representative to evaluate your unique needs and see why Honeywell's guided work for retail is the right choice for meeting current and long-term needs.
The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Zebra. When was the last time you discussed upgrading Zebra products with your customers? With a bevy of new releases spanning their entire portfolio and the shift to Android as the enterprise OS of choice, there has never been a better time to discuss upgrading and refreshing.
To help you figure out where to start, Blue Star has reviewed your unique sales history for Zebra Technologies, identifying every opportunity to refresh your customer base. Mobile computers, scanners, printers, tablets, RFID, even services and supplies, Blue Star and Zebra have you covered down to the original PO number.
Don't be the last VAR to talk to your customers about upgrading. Contact your Blue Star representative today to request your Zebra Refresh Report.